From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 30th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we bring you an update on the death penalty's return to South Carolina in the form of a conversation between two of our favorite friends of the pod, Myon Schechter with South Carolina Public Radio and Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press. We have part two of Scott Morgan's rapid rehousing program in Rock Hill, and we begin our weekly installment of Campaign Trail News as Labor Day weekend officially kicks off the sprint to Election Day. And a couple of reminders, the deadline to register online to vote is October 6th at scvotes.org. And a programming note, we will drop next week's pod later on Tuesday, as we will be off on Monday observing the national holiday, Labor Day. That doesn't mean you get to take a break from labor. We actually need you to work on Labor Day by calling us at 803-563-7169. I'm sorry, these are the rules. This comes with the national holiday. It's in the fine print. You have to do some work. Give us a call. Let us know what you're doing. Fall's around the corner for all you fall freaks. I'll have my exclusive Starbucks pumpkin spice latte at a yet-to-be-determined date, but just one to keep it as exclusive as possible. Let me know how you're getting ready for fall. 803-563-7169. Really quick, guys, if you're watching the Sunday shows this weekend, Lindsey Graham will be on ABC's This Week. That's right, we can't go a week without one of South Carolina's own on the Sunday shows, including Lindsey Graham. That's where he lives. But even as a Trump surrogate, that doesn't mean that Trump's taking his advice. We've already covered that in Tuesday's episode. That's okay. That's okay for Lindsey. But in our last episode, since we're talking about those, we mentioned that after 13 years of being paused, the death penalty is back in action in South Carolina. This comes after legislative attempts over the years, both failures and successes, depending on who you ask, including making the electric chair the default method if lethal injection drugs aren't available, which they haven't been, and the addition of the firing squad as a method. But now all three of those methods are on the table for the upcoming September 20th execution of Freddie Owens. Now, someone who has been in the death chamber out at Broad River Correctional Institution is Associated Press reporter and friend of the pod, Jeffrey Collins. Jeffrey, who has an incredible knowledge of all things South Carolina thanks to his job covering the entire state for years, has also been a media witness for several executions. Myon Schechter spoke with him about those experiences and the death penalty's role in South Carolina.
Jeffrey, you wrote recently that no South Carolina governor has ever granted clemency in the modern era for someone on death row, and Governor McMaster has been quite clear on his position on the death penalty for a long time. From here, where does Owens' case go over the next 3 to 4 weeks?
There's a lot of smaller legal issues to resolve. Stuff that doesn't like include his entire case because he's out of his traditional appeals. The Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, is going to have to decide some things like whether or not Freddie Owens' attorney can choose how he is executed, lethal injection, firing squad, electric chair, as opposed to Owens himself choosing, because Owens gave his attorney power of attorney to make that decision. But the prison system's like, we got to do this legally, so is that okay? There's also going to be an issue about whether or not the information the prison department releases about the quality of the lethal injection drugs is enough to satisfy the legal requirements, both in the secrecy law about it and for the inmates' rights. As far as clemency goes, interestingly enough, yes, you are right. The governor has been unwavering in his support of the death penalty. He says he'll consider anything that comes before him because he's legally required to. But interestingly enough, he also takes the stance of a very old school kind of clemency decision. Like, he doesn't have to make that decision until minutes before the execution starts. And the prison folks call him up and say, hey, are you granting clemency? And they'll make that decision, like I said, literally minutes before this thing starts.
You mentioned firing squad, and that's the state's newest execution method. Recently, the South Carolina Supreme Court said that firing squad, in addition to the electric chair, were not considered cruel punishments. What else did the court say?
The court also allowed the lethal injection to go forward under the Shield Law. That was a big thing, is they approved. They said the Shield Law was constitutional in South Carolina, which allows a lot of secrecy around executions. No release of the names of people involved. They don't have to release information about where they obtained the lethal injection drug. Like I said, there may be very minimal information about the potency of the drug. Very little information is released about what happens to the inmate during an execution. So that was a big part also of the Supreme Court's decision.
You've covered 7 executions in your career, 6 by lethal injection, 1 by electrocution, and that's given you a pretty unique perspective than most in the state press corps have. So what can the public expect if that September 20th date is held?
Publicly, very little. I mean, part of the execution process in South Carolina has only gotten more secretive under the Shield Law is very little happens in public view. You know, there will be 3 witnesses from the media who get to see the execution. Members of the families of the victim get to see it. Either a clergy or an attorney or a family member of the inmate gets to watch it. And of course, any personnel, a law enforcement officer involved in the investigation gets to. But outside of that, that's it. Outside of the execution staff. And there are no cameras allowed. There are no audio recordings. There are no photographs. So, you know, it's all done like across the country in secret. So the only public notification will be when prison officials come out. The executions are scheduled for 6, so maybe about 6:15, 6:20, and say the execution has been legally carried out and the inmate is dead. So publicly, you won't see very much.
On that secrecy note, why do you feel like it's so important to have reporters like yourself inside the room when it's happening?
Because there's no recording, because there's no one else in that room outside of people who have an interest to a certain extent in it. Either, you know, they were involved, either their lives were shattered by whatever crime happened, or they've been defending this person or they're related to the inmate. We're the only real neutral observers in that room. We're really the only people that are looking at that from the perspective of what happens and exactly, you know, the details of what it looks like and what happens to the inmate and what does the inmate do? You know, do they look towards family members? Are they repentant? Are they, you know, aren't repentant? I mean, so we're the only neutral observers in that room. And I see it as very important because I'm the conduit to the public who then gets to use that information and determine what they wish about executions, the process, and this particular execution I'm witnessing.
On a more personal level, what is the experience like to cover someone who is about to die, who is about to or is taking their final breath?
It's somber. I mean, there's really no other word, I don't think, that's better than that. I mean, there's very few circumstances that the state is sanctioned to take someone's life. You know, war might be one. We could talk about police shootings. That's all that's one place where it can happen. But like I said, it's a very somber thing. I mean, you go and you have a job to do, in my case, to say what happened. And so the public can understand it. But because I'm a reporter and because there is a fairness aspect to it, and I need to make sure I tell exactly what happened without emotion or, you know, decision one way or the other, whether this is legitimate or should be done or not, then, you know, I have to go into it with just a very fact-oriented kind of thought. So I relate what happened, I relate how it happened, and since I'm one of the few people that are neutral and get to do that, I take that responsibility very seriously.
Jeffrey Collins of the Associated Press, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for having me, Mayon.
Thanks, Mayon. And before we jump to national politics, which I know you cannot get enough of, I want to keep it local and bring you Scott Morgan's second piece on a rapid rehousing program in Rock Hill. We brought you part one in our last episode, and here is the second of 3 parts from Scott.
Yesterday, we introduced you to Rock Hill's rapid rehousing program, funded by opioid settlement money to the city and operated through numerous partner agencies that want to give unsheltered residents a year, as opposed to the more typical 3 months, to get their feet beneath them. Today, we meet 4 people closing in on the halfway point of their year in the program, starting with Roger Boone, who spent a long time living in motels and at Bethel Men's Shelter.
I was in the shelter like a little over 2 years. I just in and out of the hospital, couldn't never get nothing going. But when this came up, not carrying your stuff around every day, I was on a walker, I had a stroke. Mm-hmm. This was a godsend, man.
And in that statement is the DNA of everyone in this house. Shelters, motels, medical conditions. hauling your entire life in boxes and bags and hoping no one steals them or throws them out. And then, of course, there is myth, like the one that someone without a permanent residence doesn't work. Boone's roommate, Scarlett Adams, would like to disabuse you of that perspective if you have it.
I went to the motel originally because I was fighting breast cancer and I was going through chemo and radiation. I couldn't afford my rent. I don't know how I ended up being able to afford a motel because it's 10 times more expensive. But I was working 7 days a week to keep that bill up. And then I ended up in the homeless shelter because I ended up in the hospital for 2 months straight on life support. And when I woke up, I didn't have any more money to pay a room.
Her 80-hour work weeks as a restaurant server didn't stop, by the way. But while we're talking about jobs here, did you ever stop to think about what it looks like to get one when you're living in a shelter? Like Thomas Cunningham did when he had his life in bags he couldn't leave after morning checkout.
Everything that you have, you have to take it with you. I had a big black bag and two backpacks.
You done before you even get the interview.
They might give you, but as soon as you step in there and they see them backpacks and them bags, it's over with.
The other voice you heard there is Scarlett's husband, Gerald Adams. They met while they were both staying at city shelters.
First, I saw her at church. And then when I seen her at the homeless shelter, a guy she called her big brother, I talked to him and said, I said, I gotta talk to her. I gotta have her.
The smooth talk approach worked, but so did the fact that Gerald met certain conditions for Scarlett.
She gave me three rules. She said, you got to believe in God first.
First and foremost, period.
Yeah. I had to be second, and there was no relations until she got married.
He agreed, and they got married, 2 days after Valentine's Day and a few weeks before they moved into this home in Southside Rock Hill. There are five adults living here, including a gentleman who didn't want to be part of this story, all straight from living in city shelters, motels, and streets, all brought together by the city's rapid rehousing program. And all of them share Roger Boone's perspective that having this place, newly renovated, clean, spacious, is a godsend, allowing them to get their lives in order over the course of a year in which responsibilities and rents gradually increase, in an effort to improve everybody's odds of being able to find and manage their own households when their time in the program is up next March. And that is, after all, what everyone here wants.
I want to be independent, you know, with everything, like trying to pay for my own place, a car, my license back. That's what I really want.
And everyone here agrees. They want to be able to pay their own bills, lock their own doors, have a place to recover from their medical treatments without having to fight for bed space, without having to schlep their lives around in boxes and bags, without risk of being arrested in the streets.
Scott's piece and Mayon's and all of South Carolina Public Radio reporters' stories can be found on southcarolinapublicradio.org, as well as the day's top news. That's where the news lives on the internet, folks. Here we are. Here we are, the starting line. The sprint to Election Day kicks off this weekend. Yes, Labor Day weekend is the unofficial end of summer and the unofficial ramp-up of the fall political season.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Talk about a horrible trade-off, folks. Yes, the lead summer hours have been traded in for office hours. Now, please read the syllabus before signing up for office hours. And no, we do not allow for makeup tests or assignments without prior approval. Again, read the syllabus before calling 803-563-7169 with your complaints. And we don't validate parking. Stop calling. Okay, rant over. Rant over. Just kidding. Rants never end, folks. And neither does the campaign trail, which is where we live. I'm letting you know that we will get in a weekly habit of bringing you some of the big moments from the presidential campaign trail, as we're now less than 65 days away from Election Day. With that, things start spinning much faster at this stage, and that includes misinformation. So I want to keep you updated with what's happening there, especially if you're not following the race super closely, which is understandable. There's a lot going on. One such story that I want to focus on and clarify that is already making the rounds is an incident that occurred at Arlington National Cemetery on August 26, when two of former President Donald Trump's campaign staffers, quote, verbally abused and pushed, quote, aside a cemetery official who tried to stop them from filming and photographing in Section 60, the final resting site for military personnel killed while fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. NPR News first broke this story. Now, Trump was at the cemetery at the request of three of the families of the fallen who died on August 26, 2021. That's unfortunately true. Now, it is against cemetery rules to film or photograph in the cemetery for political purposes. Focus on that part. So, yes, you can take photos and videos for personal reasons. I have, in fact, covered a military funeral before at Arlington. But the family didn't use those images in campaign material. That's the difference here. Now, the incident turned into a mess for the campaign, which blamed the U.S. Army staffer, saying she was suffering from a mental health crisis. Meanwhile, the U.S. Army issued a rare statement that said that the female staffer was abruptly pushed aside by the Trump campaign team, which is a direct contradiction of the Trump campaign's account. The staffer filed a report with the military police but has not pressed charges for fear of retaliation from Trump supporters. The AP reports that while campaigning in Michigan on Thursday, Trump said surviving family members had asked to take a photo with him at the cemetery.
Last night I read that I was using the site to politic, that I used it to politic. This all comes out of Washington, just like all of these prosecutors come out of Washington. They all come out, they send their prosecutors into the DA's office, they send them into the Attorney General's office. These are bad people we're dealing with. So I go there, they ask me to have a picture, and they say I was campaigning. I don't need, the one thing I get is plenty of publicity. I don't need that. I don't need the publicity. But these are great people, and when you think about it, Joe Biden killed their children by incompetence. Should have never happened. Kamala killed their children, just as though they had a gun in their hand. By gross incompetence.
So some clarifications here. Again, taking photos with family is not the same thing as having a campaign photographer on site. Trump has also used Air Force One and the White House as political campaign backdrops before, something that we had not seen in the modern era. And let's look at the Afghanistan pullout, because that date was negotiated by the Trump administration and Taliban officials in February 2020. You might remember he actually wanted to bring Taliban officials to Camp David in 2019. That was a factor that prompted his then National Security Advisor John Bolton to leave the administration. Trump's agreement with the Taliban also released 5,000 Taliban prisoners. So, I mean, everyone has a little bit of their hand in this one now. Now, Biden and Harris did not kill these soldiers any more than any president who oversees the military does. These are the risks. These have come with the territory, unfortunately. Now, the Afghanistan withdrawal date was originally May 1st, 2021, a date that Biden inherited from Trump. And then he pushed back to August 31st, despite obvious signs that the Taliban wasn't complying with the agreement and had a stated goal to create an Islamic government in Afghanistan after the United States left. Nearly 2,500 American service members died during the 20-year war that cost $1 trillion. And yes, the Taliban is in control of Afghanistan. Now, in response to the Arlington kerfuffle, Trump's running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, employed some negative language at a rally, though not as nasty as the words and innuendo Trump used against Harris on his Truth Social account. Here's J.D. Vance.
And the other thing that our veterans care, the other thing our veterans care a lot more about is that 3 years ago, 13 brave, innocent Americans died. And they died because Kamala Harris refused to do her job, and there hasn't been a single investigation or a single firing. I don't, look, sometimes mistakes happen. That's just the nature of government, the nature of military service. But to have those 13 Americans lose their lives and not fire a single person is disgraceful. Kamala Harris is disgraceful. We're going to talk about a story out of those 13 brave, innocent Americans who lost their lives. It's that Kamala Harris is so asleep at the wheel that she won't even do an investigation into what happened, and she wants to yell at Donald Trump because he showed up. She can go to hell.
Vice President Harris is not the commander-in-chief of the United States military. That would be President Joe Biden. But the Harris campaign has called the entire Arlington situation sad. Speaking of Harris, on Thursday, the vice president also did her first big sit-down interview after Biden decided not to seek re-election just over a month ago. That decision kicked off a whirlwind 5 weeks, which included the Democratic National Convention last week, in which Harris formally accepted the party's nomination after having previously secured it weeks before. Harris was getting some heat for not having done this sooner, but again, it's been a wild few weeks, folks, and I can tell you maybe talking to the media is not at the top of your agenda when you are owning the media cycle left and right. Also, she's not exactly an unknown commodity here. Despite all that, CNN's Dana Bash got the coveted interview here, where the big question was how Harris has shifted over the years since she became vice president, including whether border crossings should be decriminalized. Here's some of those moments from CNN.
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence.
Generally speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here in your policy? Is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed. You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real, that it is an urgent matter to which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. We did that with the Inflation Reduction Act. We have set goals for the United States of America and by extension the globe around when we should meet certain standards for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, as an example. That value has not changed. My value around what we need to do to secure our border, that value has not changed. I spent 2 terms as the Attorney General of California prosecuting transnational criminal organizations, violations of American laws regarding the illegal passage of guns, drugs, and human beings across our border. My values have not changed.
Harris also recalled when she spoke with Biden about his decision not to seek a second term and the era of negativity she is trying to shift.
I have served with President Biden for almost 4 years now, and I'll tell you, it's one of the greatest honors of my career, truly. He cares so deeply about the American people. He is so smart and loyal to the American people. And I have spent hours upon hours with him, be it in the Oval Office or the Situation Room. He has the intelligence, the commitment, and the judgment and disposition that I think the American people rightly deserve in their president. By contrast, the former president has none of that. And so, I am so proud to have served as vice president to Joe Biden. And two, I am so proud to be running with Tim Walz for president of the United States and to bring America what I believe the American people deserve, which is a new way forward and turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years has been part of your administration.
I'm talking about an era that started about a decade ago, where there is some suggestion, warped, I believe it to be, that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down, instead of where I believe most Americans are, which is to believe that the true measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you lift up.
And here is Bash asking Walz about a misstatement on his 24 years of National Guard service that the Trump administration is trying to spin as a stolen valor situation. Here's Bash and Walz in his own words.
You said that you carried weapons in war, but you have never deployed actually in a war zone. A campaign official said that you misspoke. Did you?
Well, first of all, I'm incredibly proud. I've done 24 years of wearing the uniform of this country. Equally proud of my service in a public school classroom, whether it's Congress or the governor. My record speaks for itself, but I think people are coming to get to know me. I speak like they do. I speak candidly. I wear my emotions on my sleeves, and I speak especially passionately about about our children being shot in schools and around guns. So I think people know me. They know who I am. They know where my heart is. And again, my record has been out there for over 40 years to speak for itself.
And the idea that you said that you were in war,
yeah.
Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English teacher, told me my grammar's not always correct. But again, if it's not this, it's an attack on my children for showing love for me, or it's an attack on my dog. I'm not going to do that. And the one thing I'll never do is I'll never demean another member's service in any way. I never have, and I never will.
Harris and Walz also participated in a two-day bus tour swing through southern Georgia this week, including visits to areas that are Republican strongholds. This is all part of a get-out-the-vote attempt to motivate voters to register and show up at the polls in a state where President Joe Biden won by 11,779 votes in 2020, which is why then-President Donald Trump pressured Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to find him 11,780 votes. Remember the phone call?
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more that we have, because we won the state, and flipping the state is a great testament to our country, because, you know, and it's a testament that they can admit to a mistake, or whatever you want to call it, if it was a mistake. I don't know.
Yes, that's how close of a state Georgia is. When you're actively trying to obstruct the free, fair, and secure election and actually get indicted for doing so too. Nevertheless, Georgia is what's called a battleground state, a swing state. Those terms are interchangeable.
Purple.
Yes, it has a Republican governor, but it also has two Democratic U.S. senators.
Purple.
All three of those positions are elected statewide, which is confusing if you think about having a Republican governor and two Democratic senators, but also voting for Joe Biden. Yes, that's how people vote. They shift their votes when they cast their ballots. That they're allowed to do that. But none of the three of those positions are on the ballot this November, just president, congressional, statehouse, and local races, which is similar to what's on the ballot here in South Carolina.
Purple.
Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're always glad you're here, A.T. Shire, producer of the lead podcast.
Thank you so much.
I'm so
glad you're glad, Gavin.
And you know what I'm glad about, too? I'm glad that we have calls that you're going to play for me. I'm looking forward to hearing from them because it's been so long, and you're going to play the calls. Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
We don't have any calls, no new ones, you know? Still, yep.
I'm
very sorry, Gavin. People, if you could see him, there's steam coming out of his ears.
His train whistle.
It's not good. His face is turning into a wolf's face.
He's eating an entire fish and just pulling the bones out. He does love his tinned fish. That's what he does.
He's pulling his collar and steam is shooting out of it also. It's not good, folks. Yeah, so if you guys, his jaw's about to hit the table.
So, and then I'm going to pull it up like a flap.
If you guys don't want this, you got to call in. Okay?
This is not good for him. Well, AT, we were talking about consuming media recently.
Of course, yes.
And, you know,
this is what this whole show's about, really.
Media consumption.
Yes.
I'm not one to sit and watch the movies or what are you watching? What shows are you watching? What are you streaming?
You're pretty unplugged from all of that.
Because I just doom scroll, right?
Yeah.
I'm going walking, I'm listening to music, I'm doom scrolling, I'm podcasting, whatever.
Yeah,
they tell me it's only good things.
Yeah.
I just can't. I mean, I'll get it. But I do have an iPad. So if I need to watch something, I'll watch on there.
However, the director intended.
iPad, it gets better because the iPad's not charged, right? We've all been there. You probably you're right there right now.
They're perpetually at 38%.
And I'm like, the other day I was like, maybe I want to watch something on the pad and it's dead. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, then I came across Amazon Prime and I was like, oh, the new Mission Impossible. I needed something stupid to watch.
Yeah, Fast and Furious.
And you know those, it's just like Fast and Furious.
Yes.
I was like, fine, I'll watch it. Watch it on my phone like a psycho.
Wow.
It's the new, I know.
Wow.
It's just like the director intended.
You get carpal tunnel from watching movies.
I love those damn movies. You know, we love an action movie. But I was watching this new one, Dead Reckoning.
Dead Reckoning. Part one.
And,
which no one tells you until the end. I'm like, actually, we're getting close, but how are they going to land this plane in 11
they
minutes?
They took the name part one off of it for some reason.
Yeah,
because
then I wouldn't have watched it. I would have waited until part two. That's what I do when there's a part one and two.
There's a moment. I'm glad you brought this movie up, Gavin.
Thank you.
Okay, I've been waiting a year to talk about this. Okay,
it's been out for a year?
For a while. I don't know. It might not be a whole year, but it might be even more. But there's a point.
I'm not on TikTok. I'm sorry.
You're like looking at the time left in the movie, and you're
doing
like, wait a second. You're like, this isn't going to end. And also, they totally could have made this one whole movie because there are so many. I haven't watched this movie except one time, but there's so many points where it's extended clips of Tom Cruise running at full speed.
Yes.
And you're just like, cut 5 minutes out of the running full speed.
I get
speed.
It. It's cinematic. It's a great backdrop. It's a great area.
I get it. He's fit.
Great.
You know? I'm so happy for you.
I do enjoy watching his face just get like... Like when he's... all that Botox is just working overtime in that face. When he's like...
He's finally starting to show his age, but...
It's okay. Let go, Tom.
It's fine. And that's fine. I'm not trying to say that as a bad thing. But the one bad thing about Tom Cruise, Scientology aside, is that it's the middle tooth for me. If you don't know what I'm talking about, pause right now. Google Tom Cruise middle tooth.
Don't ruin this for me.
You'll see it, and then you won't unsee it ever again. The tooth, it is in the direct middle. He does not have a space between two teeth in the middle. He has a middle tooth.
Oh, the gum line.
Middle tooth. It's middle tooth. I mean, first search Tom Cruise Outsiders.
Oh, I see that now. Yeah, when they do the...
Yep.
You know, maybe that's what makes him so attractive. Is that
look up Tom Cruise Outsiders first.
And if you look at it like a
And then
smile.
Search middle tooth. And then you'll never unsee it. That's the reason why. And then it'll be seared into your eyes when you close your eyelids to go to sleep at night.
But then, you know, it's an interesting premise for the movie, though. I will admit that. You know, AI taking over, et cetera.
I'm totally fine with it. Yeah, I love it.
You know, Elon Musk people.
I gotta say.
Go ahead. It can
Fast
hear us.
And Furious did this in Hobbs and Shaw. Hobbs and Shaw had a rogue AI.
Did it?
I'm pretty sure it did. If it didn't have a rogue AI, it had a disembodied voice that was the bad guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're retreading well-trodden ground. We're treading and trotting. Okay?
Oh, in like a bog, some would say.
We are in a bog. the nadir of IP.
Bog.
Yeah. The only worthwhile extended universe is the lead extended universe, South the Spooky. Just watch that. Listen to that season over and over and over again, please.
Oh, it's coming up. Oh, this is what I want to talk about, too. You know, the entity in this movie.
Sure.
There's no spoiler here because I don't know how it ends yet, guys. So
there is nothing.
The AI entity that becomes self-aware and sentient. Or everyone's biggest fear.
Skynet.
But there are moments when, the sentient being, the entity, you know, just it kills. You know, like it just wreaks destruction here.
Yes.
That's always the theme about these things. Like, we're talking about Space Odyssey 2001, Hal. He's like, bye, guys. I'm better off without you.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be depressed that the machines are telling us that we shouldn't be here anymore?
I think this...
What does that mean about us?
This also
do humans
goes,
serve a purpose on this planet?
This also goes... we are a disease.
nature's trying to take over always.
This goes to the sort of thing where, like, if aliens existed, they probably do, right? But if they do, they've seen us and they're like, ooh, we don't want to talk to them. Yeah, hard pass.
We'll come back in a couple years when things have figured themselves out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a threshold we have to cross in technology and something that these uber beings would even begin to be interested in us.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're ever going to cross it. And that's why The Matrix put us in 1999.
Oh.
That's why we get 1999.
Y2K bug.
That's right before
Y2K. Maybe the aliens like, oh, we don't need that much water. You know, they look at our planet like, oh, we don't actually need any of that.
Well, according to science, it kills them. Anyway, Gavin, kill this show.
Hey, why did they come here then?
Swing away. Swing away on the credits, please.
What an incredible tie and wind down right there. If that's not enough to get you to call in, well, then I just stop listening. Okay. But if you do want to call in, and please keep listening, 803-563-7169. Give us some theories. I hope we didn't weigh too much on you right there with AI taking over and destroying humanity. But, you know, that's a possibility. You can also show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also do that before we die. You can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org, and don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Cloppy shoes.
I know.
They were really...
I couldn't find my other ones, so I'd wear these ones.
Really cloppy.
Oh, it's authoritative.
Purple.